Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. It's tomorrow, right?
Yeah. It is tomorrow. Which is weird because it's the anniversary is the day after we record, but the day before everybody else hears it.
That's confusing.
Yeah. So let's just say it's today. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
It is. It is. What number are we on, by the way? What is the episode number?
This is 460.
That's it? I thought we were in the 500s. We're not in the 500s?
No.
We're still babies.
Yep.
We're 60.
I think we're teenagers at this point.
Yeah. So this is the 10-year anniversary of the podcast, the 10-year anniversary of me going full-time on YouTube, the 10-year wedding anniversary for Kelly and I. It's quite the year.
That's pretty wild.
10 years.
It was a
good
ride.
How old are you now, Dave? How old are you?
I don't know.
Kelly, how old am I?
So you were either 38 or 39 when we started this.
Right.
That's crazy.
Got
to be 39 again.
That's pretty wild.
It's a good old days.
I saw somebody the other day complaining, somebody like on Instagram or something, like, oh, when you hit 35, this happens. And it was this list of things that happened to him. I was just like, man, shut up. 35, whatever. Yeah. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I got my sawmill is assembled and ready to go. I just have to get some hydraulic fluid for the controls that would flip the log. But I'm ready to go. I got the blade going.
Got all the missing parts.
There's a giant pile of unused parts. I don't know where they go. But it seems like it's working.
I can't wait to see what you do with that. That's amazing.
I hope to try and cut at least a piece of wood today. As soon as we're done, I got to go get a couple gallons of hydraulic fluid for the system, because now that all the hoses, it comes with a little bit in it. But now that the hoses are all attached, they're starting to fill up the system. So got to replenish the reservoir. And that's it. Between me and Rob and Mike the fireman and Ryan, who lives with me here. Ryan's been living with me for years. He's a secret in the background. He never wants to be on camera. And Ryan went over there yesterday and connected all the hydraulics that we hadn't already gotten to. I had a busy day yesterday, so I'm at the end of the day. He's like, the thing's ready to go if you want to test fire it. And we ran over there in the evening, and I test fired it. Like I said, I just need some more fluid, but I'm ready to cut. I'm really excited. Very, very exciting.
Cool.
I just have to find a log. I got to go travel around on my property and find a log to play with.
So this is going to sound dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So apologies.
It's okay.
Maybe, whatever. I know that it's a bandsaw, and so you effectively have to treat it like you would a bandsaw. Like, the limitations are the same. It's a similar blade. Mm-hmm. It's just way thicker and stuff like that. But is there anything you can do with this past wood? Like, you know what I mean? Like, can you use this for a purpose that it's not meant to be used for? In a really interesting material or way or something.
Well, yeah, I've been racking my
brain. Like, what are the limitations, I guess, is my question.
I can't cut anything but wood. I don't think I could. I mean, if I wanted to put some soft foam in there, I could probably do that. Hmm. It also comes with a planer. I'll send you guys a picture. It comes with a planer, a molder. So if I run...
Wow.
If I run a bunch of logs, say run a bunch of, like, 6x8s, and I have a bunch of 6x8s, I could put those back on the frame. I could put them back on the sawmill and run the planer over them and put a bead in a cove on two at a time. So you could put a set of blades where one is concave and one is convex, so that you then make a series of logs that will stack on top of one another.
Oh.
I could also plane boards up to 12 inches wide. There was a limitation there. But 12 inches wide on... I could imagine if I wanted to do like a rough clean, if let's say I cut a wide board and it ends up being, say, 20 inches wide, I can cut up to 36 inches wide. I could run the molder over, loosen the screws and slide it over and run the molder again, because the molder is 12 inches wide, but it's on a sliding rack that goes the whole width of the gantry. So I could probably do that. So for instance, if I'm making a series of, let's say, 2x4s, and I can run the planer over it and get a clean surface, cut it off, run the planer, get a clean surface, cut it off, and then every piece that comes off will always have one clean side to go through the surface thickness planer. There's a lot of, like, tricks and doodads I need to get up to speed on.
Are you able to run it by yourself as a one-person operation, or does it take two people?
Yeah, No, that's part of the reason why I bought the tractor, because I'll be able to pick up heavy logs and put them onto it. And once the logs are on the machine, there is a turner, a stopper, a clamp, and a pusher, and a leveler. So there's all these devices that will pick up one end. They're called a tow board. You could tow board this one up, tow board that one up. You see, you put on a severely tapered log, you could tow board up one side so that the cut you're about to make a few inches from the surface is parallel. And you work your way down, and then you could flip it, and then you turn that cut surface, flip it against the stoppers, and then hydraulic press it against it, and then make a square. So I got the 411 watching those guys. I obviously need some practical experience playing around with it. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun making stuff. You know, we've been watching Matt Cremona do it for years, and it's really fun to watch. It's going to be even more fun to do it. I'm excited. Yeah, and yesterday, it's almost like it was dropped in my lap. So I'm having the horse barn, which is closed up, but now the next hurdle is the bathroom situation. So I need to put a small septic, so I'll have a whole bathroom shower out there. And I met an engineer, it was the third or fourth engineer that I finally answered my phone call and set up a proposal and everything. But he came over yesterday, he's like, I'll come over right after I drop off a truck full of logs. And then when he got here, I'm like, did you say something about a truck full of logs? He's an architect and a forester guy. And he's like, yeah, I come across logs all the time. I was like, well, I just got a sawmill. He's like, I'll bring you logs. So there you go. Fell wow. Right into my lap. And he also sent me the proposal for the bathroom engineering. He has to engineer the septic tank, which is a little bit of a pain in the ass. So that fell right into my lap. Everyone's like, where are you going to get logs from? I was like, I can cut some down. My trees on my property aren't really much bigger than 12 inches, because my whole property used to be a horse pasture, less than 70 years ago. So I think maybe in the 60s, so that's 50 years ago, my whole property was a horse pasture. So there aren't too many old growth trees on my property, because there were, even then, the trees were let to grow after the horse pasture from like the 70s and the 80s. The trees aren't that fat. There's a lot of them, but they're not fat. So anyway, that's what I'm up to. I'm looking forward to do that. And this weekend, I'm going to do a barn update video for the published this weekend. I did a set of saddlebags, throw over saddlebags last week. And I think I just broke 8 views this morning. So I'm excited about that. Mm. Yeah, I'm going to hit 10. 10 views.
That's big money right there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to hit 10 views by the end of this episode, I think, if you guys watch.
that's why you're on here today, just to convince the two of us to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just want to, you know, it's going to, cool. I want it to be 100 of 100 is what I'm going for.
I got you, man. I'll watch it for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Cool. Well, David, what about you? What have you been doing?
I've been, that's a good question. I should be ready for this, right?
Yeah.
I'm building a couple pieces of shop furniture, which I've decided to film. I wasn't going to, and now I am. And then I'm also working on, I got this suitcase from the antique mall a few weeks ago, and I'm turning it into this like crazy cabinet thing. And that's all I really need to say about it for right now, because I don't know how to describe it. And
oh, I see.
We'll just leave it as a good teaser.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, I've been working on. That's kind of weird, because the video that is coming out this weekend was supposed to come out last weekend, and it just wasn't quite done. So we didn't have anything for this weekend, so we pushed it. And so I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, yeah. So my camera stand, I don't know if I talked about this or not, but my camera stand that I made recently, you know, with the pole and the slider and everything, I made version 2 of that. And I don't normally do that. I don't normally go back and, like, redo something or update something. But for that one, like, I don't know, it was really good, but it just wasn't quite there. And I got a bunch of messages from people saying, like, oh, can you give me the link for this thing? Because I want to make one of those, because I make videos too. And I kept being like, I mean, I'm like, maybe, but it's not, you know, it wobbles and it this. And So I made a video of a version 2, and it's essentially the same thing, but I kind of laid out at the beginning, here are some things specifically that I want to improve. And so we're going to try to improve these 3-4 things. And they definitely got better. The big thing was the wobble. Like the whole thing, when you poked it, which it wasn't made for moving shots and stuff, but when you like touched the record button or touched the lens or something, the whole thing would kind of wobble for a good 15-20 seconds before it settled itself. And so there were several changes I made to improve that, and it's a drastic improvement on that one thing. And then the other stuff that I tried to do is better as well. But you know, it was kind of interesting going back to something, because I don't normally do that. And you guys don't really do that either, right? You don't usually go back to projects.
No.
Yeah. If I do, I do it off camera. I don't usually show it on camera. Unless something really big breakthrough, but I can't think of anything.
Yeah. I mean, I typically don't think that's going to be that interesting for people, because, you know, 90% of the work is already done. It's just a matter of dialing something in or whatever. And this, I don't know if I'll be able to justify it or not, but I tried to justify this one by, I don't know exactly how to make this better, so I'm going to try some stuff. You know, so there's like the experimentation, seeing, and I wasn't sure that I would actually be able to improve it at all. So, but I did. So that's what's coming out this week, and then I'm working on the next week's video, and it's almost done, and then I have to immediately start into the next two. We're stacking this month up where we have like 4 in a row, which we haven't done in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Just trying to get ahead of the holidays and, you know, time off and all that type of stuff. So kind of interesting, but definitely busy. And what else? What else? I think that's about it. I'm brainstorming a bunch of new stuff in back of my head. And it's interesting, like, small ideas are easy to have an idea and then be like, oh yeah, like, I'll put that on the list, I'll do that, that's no big deal, because it'll take this much time, you know, it'll take this a day's worth of thinking or a week's worth of thinking or whatever. And then you have these other ideas that are bigger horse barn like ideas, where it's like, that would be really cool, but it would take money, planning, time, discipline, it would take all these things. And I have a bunch of those ideas that all kind of happened at once. And so now I have this immediate front brain right now, I've got to work on this stuff. But then on the back of my head, I've also got this long term, oh, that would be really cool. Oh, I would have to do this thing, and I would have to buy one of these, and I would have to plan that, you know. So it's kind of weird being in the middle of a bunch of short term and long term ideas and trying to figure out how to make progress on all of them right now. But that's kind of what I'm doing. Speaking of long-term ideas, remember remember when I was sound like my kids. Remember, I was asking a few weeks ago about making the road.
I remember.
Do you remember?
Remember.
And
George Lopez.
So I got a bunch of
you remember.
I got a bunch of responses on Instagram and stuff after that show about, you know, like, there was a guy that works for, he's like a civil engineer and does road planning and stuff, and gave me a bunch of resources, some of which I absolutely did not understand, but it was still really helpful. And then just a bunch of recommendations about what to use and how to do it and all this stuff. Then Tom from Infinite Craftsman was like, yep, yeah, you should just get a quote that's going to be a ridiculous number, and then just use that quote to justify going to buy a backhoe and do it yourself. Oh. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I already kind of looked on Marketplace to see if like backhoes would be possible, but you look at them there and with no idea of what I'm looking at, I'm like, on this one single page, there are backhoes that look like they might work. Like, they might run, I don't know, and they're $5,000. And then there's ones that are brand new, like the one Jimmy just got. It's like that whole thing, and they're $25,000 or whatever.
If it's used, yeah.
Yeah, if it's used. And I don't know what any of it is. So looking at those things, I don't know what I would need. I don't know what a good value would be. You know, I just don't have any context for that
mini,
at all.
Mini backhoe. Look for a mini hoe. It has a platen in the front to push.
Yeah.
a mini hoe is really up here. All the guys that, I work with say the mini hoe is the most versatile thing. I don't own one, obviously, but when I watch these guys work with them, it's magic. It's a mini hoe. You'd be able to flatten, and if it has a thumb, you could pick up rocks and stuff. I watch the guys up here do everything with a mini hoe, but they're expensive.
Yeah. So I asked him about that. I said, I just don't know what I'm looking for. And so he immediately sends me back, and he asked for my zip code. Tom's a great guy. And sent me a listing within like 30 or 40 minutes of here or something. He was like, this one's a beast. And then he goes to show me, he sent me a bunch of videos of his tractor, which I think was the same one or really similar, if not the same one. And he like walked through, you need to get one of these. This is what this is for. You know, it's, this is this kind and this is this thing. And he like gave me this little class through a bunch of videos about backhoes. It was really awesome because I learned way more about it than I would have otherwise. I still don't know that I'm going to do that, but I did learn a lot, and it was really nice of him. And so now I'm trying to think, like, I don't know, man. Like, what else could I use that for? Could I justify that? No.
It's a slippery slope because they're so pricey.
Yeah.
Like my backhoe that I bought and used in the videos, is I paid $10,000 for it at a garage sale, and I didn't even know anything about it. And it worked well. I got lucky. I got, even though it looked like a wreck, I got really lucky because it has low hours. And when I looked at the whole thing, there was only one broken hose on it. And every other hose still has the factory paint on it, which means that the one I replaced, the hose that I replaced, so far is the only hose that needed to be replaced since the thing is new. And it's a 1993. So, and I put new tires on it. So it was $10,000. The tires were $500 each.
Oh my gosh.
The fix that one hose was a house visit that cost $800 for the guy to come and fix that hose. It is unbelievably expensive when you get into these machines. Mm. That's why, believe it or not, I bit the bullet and just bought a brand new one so that I didn't have to worry about it. Obviously, it's very expensive, but when I look at the monthly payment, I rationalize it as I just have a part-time employee and I have this machine available to me. That and I justified it by, for the last 20 years, constantly having local guys do stuff for me with their tractors. And like, now I don't need, I have a snow plow. I could pick up, I got a big giant delivery a couple weeks ago when I got the scaffolding stuff that I mentioned last week from BJ. Thank you. I was able to pick that up right off the truck. And now all the time guys call me and go, hey, I got a delivery for you. It's the, and I always just give my home address because it's easy. And I say, if I give you $20, will you meet me down the road at my other place where there's a forklift? And they're happy because then they can just get on and go. They don't have to unload the pallet with me.
Yeah.
But now I could say, yeah, come here. But long story short, those machines, they're all just so expensive when it gets any repairs.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, probably what I'll do is just look for renting something like that.
Yeah. Just for, at least to get playing
with the time that I need time. It, which, yeah. Just because I think even investing in it to have long term would probably be a better use of the money, but I don't know how much I would use it, and then I would have to account for maintenance that I don't understand. You know, I don't really know even what to plan for on maintenance on a machine like that. So I'll probably end up renting. But anyway, regardless, it was helpful to, you know, just get some info and try to understand a machine I don't know anything about a little bit better. So big thanks to Tom for that.
They are a lot of fun to play with.
Oh, I'm sure. I saw a video the other day of somebody had gotten a little tiny excavator, like a remote control excavator.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's great.
And they were like sitting at the beach, sitting in a chair, just like digging a hole. It's like, looked like a lot of fun. But, so, you know, I'm working on that. Working on the planning for the road thing and just trying to figure out what I actually need to do there, which I don't think is going to be that big of a deal, whether I have to rent something or borrow something or whatever. Man, I just went for a run and my throat is giving me difficulties, so I apologize. Because it's our anniversary, and last week we did a bunch of questions, we still have a whole bunch of questions. And so I think we should just jump in and do some more questions, if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah, of course. It's the best.
These are all from Patreon supporters. So huge thanks to them for being around for so long. And you know, no matter how long they've been supporting the show, 10 years of a show that has only been paid for by Patreon supporters is pretty amazing. Like, that's kind of crazy. So yeah. Thank you to everybody who has at any point supported the show. Really grateful. Speaking of Patreon, we got an email again from Patreon, and I mentioned this a little while back, but I got to bring it up again. I'm going to cough one more time. Hang on.
He presses the turner down really low button.
I have a foot pedal that I can like tap, and I can cough.
We can hear
so
you.
Check this out.
We can hear you.
You can hear me when I cough?
Yeah. It's the turn it down really low button.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, it still comes through, but it's really low.
It's not intrusive.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to have to fix my button. Anyway.
Step on turn it down really low button.
So Patreon is doing this thing. They're switching from, like right now, our Patreon supporters sign up, say, I want to pay this much per episode. So every time we post an episode, they get charged whatever they commit to for that episode. And that's the way Patreon's been since the beginning. But now they are changing it because of Apple's subscription, whatever, whatever. I don't care about any of that stuff. They're changing it so that patrons will now pay a monthly fixed amount regardless of how many shows we put out or regardless of how many posts a creator makes or whatever. It's just like a fixed monthly fee. This is not something we really have a choice in. This is just a change that they're making, as far as I understand it. And the way that they are going to adjust it is, say there's a current Patreon supporter who says, I want to do, let's just be funny, $100 an episode, which doesn't happen, by the way, but let's just say that. And we typically do 4 episodes a month. Then instead of charging them $100 per episode, they would just find the average over the last few months of how many shows we've put out, and set that person's new amount to $400 a month. So it's effectively mostly going to be the same for every person individually. Of course, that person can go in and adjust that amount to whatever they want to. You can also set monthly limits on it so it never goes over a certain amount. I'm just giving you if you're listening and you're a supporter, this is how they're going to change it. And like I said, we don't really have a lot of control over this. We are going to send out a message to everybody. Dang it, I got to cough again.
All good.
Okay.
All good.
We're going to send out a message explaining all this stuff in detail to everybody. Just heads up, there is going to be a change coming. It's not our fault. But
You'll probably get a bunch of emails. One from us, a bunch from Patreon. And then after the switch is made, you'll get another email. Just hang tight.
Yeah, but it'll happen in the next month or so, probably. I think it has to happen by the end of November. But our Patreon supporters sent us questions. So we have a bunch of questions. And I have not really picked these out. I just put them all in a document because they're all pretty good. So we're just going to kind of go through and kind of grab some. What are some good entry? Okay, well, I don't know if this is... I'm not sure that we are the right people to answer this, but we'll do it anyway. Eric Hinkston. I've appreciated the expanded versions of your available tools, how we've changed our tool sets over the years. I'm about to purchase a 3D printer and maybe a CNC. What are some good entry-level options for these tools? So we all have done the entry-level thing for most tools, and then we're all fortunate enough to be able to upgrade and, you know, change over time and stuff. Do you guys feel like you're connected with the tools that you use, the areas enough to be able to recommend like an entry level tool for CNCs, 3D printers, lasers, stuff like
lasers
that?
Maybe I'm going to be working with a laser company and I'm not going to mention them because I haven't used it yet, so I can't recommend it yet, but the X-Tool P2 is a great laser. It's much more affordable than other CO2 lasers, and I have experience with it. I sold mine, and it's a good machine. If you're looking for a machine that's enclosed and can cut and engrave and score and all that, CNCs, I'm really disconnected. I only know my Stepcraft CNC, and I know it pretty well. I don't know they're not on the high end of expenses, but they're not on the low end either. So I really disconnected there.
When I first started CNC, I was kind of watching on the sideline everybody, and I got jealous. I wanted to get involved. And at each maker fair that I had gone to, I was watching it, and I kept thinking, I don't need that. And then I decided, okay, let me try it. I bought a desktop from ShopBot. I bought a desktop. It's 18 by 24, and it's very robust. It was $7,000. I put it on a credit card. I didn't have any money in the bank when I bought it. I just said, if I put this on the credit card and then force my way, figure out how to pay it. And I paid it off fairly quickly with work that I made from the machine. So I bit the bullet and got a really decent machine. Now, I bought it 11 years ago, and it's in my shop, and it's robust. It still works as good as it did the day I got it. There was one like motherboard thing, which they sent me the new part, walked me through on the phone, and I changed it. But in that 11 years, it's been there. And then I bought one from Brian Prusa for $4,000, a used one that Brian had that he had never used. So now I have two of them. And so you could find a good used one if you're willing to pay a reduced price. I mean, if you're willing to buy a used one. But in my opinion, you start playing around with the entry-level ones, and there's lots of problems. The other ones, like stretched cables and janky software and janky routers. And I just jumped right into a stouter machine after doing some research. And then I had that. And then the X-Carve, remember, everybody got an X-Carve is when you joined YouTube, you got a free X-Carve. And everybody got an X-Carve. And I had, just for purposes of promotion, I went back and I promoted the X-Carve. But working with this ShopBot was, it's like the difference between driving like a Yugo that doesn't work very well, get you there, versus getting into a brand new Cadillac. That would be the difference between the ShopBot and the X-Carve. Is X-Carve still a business? I haven't talked to those guys in a long time. I'm sure they've improved their product by now. I know it's the only thing that, honestly. I'm pretty sure it's what Jackman uses. So I know they have a much more decent new product. But in general, I just like a steel heavy machine that runs on screws versus cables.
I think the biggest issue I see with CNCs is when you go from entry level to pro quotes, is the software. And if you just jump right into the pro stuff, you're overwhelmed with software because you have you need a program to draw your stuff. Then you need another program that talks to the machine, and it all looks overwhelming and confusing at first. When Inventables came out with the X-Carve, they were like the first ones to simplify the whole thing. Both pieces of software in one that was browser-based and very limited in its functionality, but it was pretty, you understood it by looking at it. Oh, I need to draw a circle. I need to add text. I'm using this bit, send to the machine.
Yeah. And I think the same, you know, that like simplification necessary tool thing has been done in a lot of these digital tools. I think the Glowforge did a really good job of that same thing that you just mentioned with the laser, like the integration and the simplification of the software. And there's definitely a lot of advantage to that on both of those machines. There's definitely some limitation there as well. So it really depends on what's your goal, what you're planning on doing with the machine, and how robust or complex you need it to be. You know, I would say from a laser perspective, like I only have the experience of, I bought a Glowforge when it came out, and I had it for a really long time. I bought a full-spectrum laser, which had their own built-in software as well, which was good software, but very frustrating. That was Jimmy, by the way. And then since then, I've got a Thunder laser, which uses Lightburn. I would say my recommendation with the laser, Lightburn is the software to use because it is not dependent on a particular machine. It doesn't work with every machine.
And it's much easier to call up a friend that has any machine and say, hey, what about this Lightburn situation?
Yeah. Lightburn's a good individual piece of software that can work with lots of different machines.
And then so is Vectrex. Vectrex is also the similar where it licenses across several different manufacturers. Vectric is the software
for CNC,
for router CNC.
As far as like, so with laser, those are the only ones I've experienced with personally. So I would only recommend Glowforge. I think is overpriced for what it is, but it's also kind of a nice package just to have it all in one. The Thunder Laser stuff that I've used is very nice, very well built, very robust.
But Aeon Laser is the best laser made.
Hashtag sponsored.
Yeah, and all of our answers are
biased.
I mean, we cannot help but be biased because we work with companies that make all
these
things.
I'm going to say all lasers that I've worked with are basically the same. If you have the more power, the thicker stuff you can cut. If your laser is, I have a 130 now, Thunder, and it works really good. I'm getting a 130 Aeon, but it's got a lot of patented improvements, which I haven't seen. And the machine is on its way here. And they get better and better. Every manufacturer copies each other, and they get better and better and better.
With the 3D printers, just to go back and wrap the question up, the 3D printer, you can buy a $100 3D printer. I would not buy a $100 3D printer. You can. And that would be, like, if you're looking at entry level as cheap, inexpensive, you can do that. But be prepared to spend lots of time tweaking it on a regular basis, because whatever changes you make will probably not stick, and you will have to constantly adjust and constantly refine and constantly tune. My recommendation would be to buy the less expensive of a couple of brands, either Prusa. Everything I've ever had by Prusa is fantastic. I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Prusas. Everyone's great. Bamboo Labs is a newer company, but is like just killing it on integration of software and hardware and AI and cameras and all this stuff. And even their cheaper machines are still really nice machines. David has one of those.
Right? I have one of their cheaper machines. It's amazing. It's like, I believe it's $200 and some. And you can upgrade it to have different multiple spools and filament and all that. But I just have the single one, the base model, and it's amazing. I have had a Prusa, and I had issues, and maybe it was user error of the whatever, I don't know, the hot end kept clogging all the time. For whatever reason, my Bamboo Lab A1 that I bought and paid for just works flawless every single time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think anything from either one of those companies is a pretty good step towards reliable, easy to use. You don't have to mess with it a whole lot. Unless that's what you want. A lot of people like 3D printers because they have to mess with them. It's like having an old car. You have to tune it. You have to continue to, and, you know, whatever you're into. But for me, I personally like tools that just work and do the job that they're supposed to do. So I hope that helps.
Yeah. If you like being frustrated, get into the digital tools. CNC lasers.
Yeah.
3D printers.
Yeah. I say that all the time about people. And you know, Derek was a great example. He didn't have a CNC. Then he got a CNC. And unavoidably, you become an expert at your machine, because your machine has its own ghosts and its own personality. But you also become an expert at the personality of the software and all the different stuff. It's very rare that you buy a machine and it's just like a printer where you plug it in and just hit print. There's so many nuances you must learn.
That's true.
But you'll learn them. You'll learn them by just jumping in and making mistakes.
Yeah.
Comes fast. It comes very fast.
This is not a question, but it's a nice thing from Wade Cargath. Just wanted to say that Gilligan's Workshop was one of my favorite episodes. Do you remember that? Gilligan's Workshop?
No.
Is that something we did?
That was one of our very first episodes. In the first maybe 10, I don't remember the
number. Is it about like what the one thing we'd need if we were stranded or something?
Yeah. Oh. If we were centered, one tool would you have? And I remember having that conversation.
Did I say bandsaw? Because I'll say it now.
Probably, I'm sure. Anyway, he just said, thanks for the insights. I find myself quoting each of you from time to time from inspiration I've received.
Oh, that's very so sweet. Thank you.
It was very nice. Okay.
I bought a bandsaw at a garage sale over the weekend.
Of course you did. You can say that every week.
It was funny. I can't stand when you bump into these know-it-alls. The guy at the garage. So, yeah, that was my father-in-law. It's going to need a new motor. I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, the motor seized. And he walked out of the room, and I like janked on the thing, like chink, 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 and the motor spins freely. I'm like, cool, how much? $70. It's going to need a new motor, though. I'm like, I know everything. I know everything.
You should have, did you get it cheaper because it needs a new motor? Because that's
that's why I said, that's why it's priced at 70, because it needs a new motor. I'm like, yeah, it's a good deal. I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it.
Jimmy, we need more videos.
Delta Benz. Okay.
Quick, amazing YouTube videos. It's just throw on the one of the cameras that just hangs on your chest and just record you buying stuff at garage sales and thrift stores.
True. Me and Rob went to this estate sale and we spent $125 and we left with a bunch of hand tools and that bandsaw. It's crazy.
All right. This one is from Jerry Findlay. How have the tools, materials, and equipment that you regularly use changed over time? Anything you used 10 years ago that you don't bother with anymore?
Oh, yeah, I can answer that. Now I'm always going for three-phase equipment because my TV show barn is what we call it now because there's so many shops. But the TV show barn has three-phase in it.
I have so many shops.
I gotta,
I'm going to have to give them serial numbers. I got so many.
They each have their own address. So the TV show barn, I have three-phase in it, and then also have my American Rotary three-phase converter and some of the other shops. So to run three-phase equipment, I jokingly say, and I mean it really, I don't want anything to stall. It drives me bananas when you stick a piece of material into a saw or a drill or something, and then it stalls or the belt slips. I can't stand it. It's my biggest pet peeve. So three-phase equipment, you don't usually have those type of problems. In the past, I frustratingly muscled through some different, and then this comes from doing a lot of manufacturing processes. If you can do the same thing over and over, and then the tool's not performing, then you go and buy a three-phase. And the three-phase is pennies on the dollar because nobody has the ability to run it. You go to an auction, something like that. It's heavy. Nobody wants to move it, and nobody has the electric for it. So these machines are the best quality machines you can possibly get, but you're dealing with electric and rigging. So if you're willing to bite the bullet and deal with that, and that's what I've changed for me, if that was the question.
Yes. Stop buying steel, hardwood, and plywood from box stores.
Yes.
Find a hardwood dealer. Find a plywood dealer. Find a metal supplier. If you live near a big city, they have them. It's cheaper and it's better.
And you can also, for steel, believe it or not, I sometimes peruse Facebook Market because you have guys that have tons of steel that they bought for a project, they're not using, they have extra I-beams that could be interesting. I'm looking for 9-inch steel tubes for a series of driveway lights we're going to make. I actually found a guy. But stuff like that, if I had to go buy it from a mill, it's much more expensive than buying it from some guy that's trying to clear out his yard. If you get lucky.
I'm sure that I've left stuff behind, but I really can't think of. I can't think of anything that I've abandoned. You know what I mean? Like I've added tools, and so I use things less. I do less woodworking in the last couple of years than I have before, but I don't like not do it. I just don't do as much of it because I'm doing other stuff.
You abandoned your Land Rover,
Cruiser.
Land Cruiser.
Oof. Yeah, that's offensive.
I had a conversation about that a couple days ago. I'll give you a heads up in the after show where that's at.
Oh boy.
Oh, he sounds mad. He's finally mad. It's 3 years.
All right. So this one's from Andrew Angel and Angel. I don't know. Sorry, Andrew. Andrew, what is the memory or story from the last 10 years that comes up about each of the other two guys when they come up in a conversation, like? What are they like to hang out with, talk to, that one time kind of stories? Do y'all have stories about each other or me?
I always, two stories that I have for both of you guys. Bob, when you first started emailing me, when we first started connecting, I thought you were a big corporation that was associated with Maker Faire because of your logo. I thought you were some big giant corporation, and we went back and forth, and I honestly thought that you were like the president of I Like to Make Stuff, and it was like and you were like who's the guy, what is his name, Dale, you were like Dale over at Maker, and I thought that you were associated with, like Boing Boing is loosely associated with Maker Faire. Boing Boing is an old school magazine that now is digital. And I thought you were like another like San Francisco tech makery cool dude. I was like, oh wow, who is this dude? Like, and then you're just another YouTuber like me. I was like, oh, this guy's just like me. But I was very
he's
impressed.
He's a loser.
He's a loser like me. But I was very impressed with your logo, and it really it set that tone before I even knew anything about you. There you go. And Dave, I miss the old Drunken Woodworker Review episodes. That was how I found out about And I told you, I said this several times, I made a stool video and I Googled it to see if I was copying anybody, and I was similar to something you did. And that's when I reached out to you. I was like, hey, dude, I just accidentally made this similar to yours. I wasn't copying you. And you're like, don't worry about it. It's all good. And that's how we started talking.
How fun.
Yeah.
I think when I think of you guys and we're all hanging out together, Jimmy is a magnet for other people. There's something about Jimmy that says, I have a lot of experience and I have a lot of knowledge. And I think people just want to cling on to that. So, guys, I have to take a phone call. I'll be right back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'll go. So about Jimmy, I always tell people that you give like the best hugs.
Oh yeah.
And that you are, so like I think people who don't know you, who just have the passing, who haven't personally talked to you, have the passing like, hey, he's like a gruff New Yorker construction type guy, you know, he just like builds stuff, you know.
And from New York.
And like that, like the first time we hung out in San Francisco, I think one of the first things you did was give me a hug. Like, and we had never physically been near each other. And that was so cool. That's like,
I guess that's like a New York thing. That's what we all
do. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It was like, you have a tenderness that I think people don't expect. And I think it's really awesome. And I've seen you cry 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And we've cried together. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
And
Well, thank you. So, that's really sweet.
I think you're a teddy bear that wears a camo hat. That's what I think.
Oh, thank you.
And then David's not here. But he, I think, people expect him to be super outgoing, you know, when they see him on... He's
when he was
okay.
The drunken
David,
woodworker.
I was just starting to talk about you.
Everybody thinks you're the drunken woodworker dancing on camera.
Yeah, I think people think that you are really outgoing and really, you know, an extrovert. And the times that we've been together, I think you thrive on being... one-on-one, small conversation, quiet place, you know, personal interaction, not like big on stage. And you know, I think that's pretty common that a lot of us are actually introverts, but we look like extroverts because we're public. But yeah. And I was saying about Jimmy that I think people often run into him on the internet and they think that he's like this gruff kind of New York construction guy, and he's actually like a teddy bear with a camo hat on. He's like super, you know, kind and gentle, and you know, oh, you should. Yeah.
And what I was going to say about Bob is he is the person that I talk to on the podcast. Bob is always Bob. It's a family first, and Bob, my impression is Bob doesn't like the spotlight. Bob doesn't enjoy the quote-unquote fame that comes with the YouTube. He is a very family-first person and doesn't need all the fame.
That's fair. I agree. Cool. All right, let me see what we got here. How would you... Oh, this is interesting. This is from James Graham. How would you tell someone who sees you in public to approach you? And there's some options. Don't approach me at all. Don't if I'm with my family. Always approach me. Just wondering because I've never seen anyone in public outside of a show or a trade show. And, you know, he's that's a really kind question to ask about how people would like to be approached. I'll go first. If I'm with my family, especially like out doing something, I would kind of like to, and this sounds, I mean, it sounds bad, but it's like what you just said, I guess. I would like to be left alone, because if I'm doing something with my family, that is my priority. And I kind of just want, I mean, come say hi, but like, I don't want to have a conversation. I don't mind like saying hi to people, of course, but I don't want to be pulled away from whatever I'm doing with my family to have a conversation.
I just thought of a funny answer. Yeah. I'm not laughing at you, Bob.
Okay. But also, if you were like the guy who started talking to me at the urinal in the bathroom in the mall in Nashville, that's a bad idea. Don't do that.
Did you need help?
It was, I mean, it was just like, he was nice and everything, but what a weird place to have a conversation. Just wait till I'm like washing my hands or
I think what happens
bathroom,
with some people in my personal experience is that people are so blown away that they actually see you. It's almost like you've jumped off the camera if you jumped off the screen. So there are times where I meet people and they're like, hey, dude, I watch your videos. Really good stuff. I said, oh, thank you very much. It's just like as casual as that. It just happened the other day at the coffee machine at the at the milk run. Versus, what are you doing here? Like that's happened too. And then bump into somebody in the aisle of some random Home Depot when I'm getting a part, when I'm on some delivery or something. That happens too. And I think people have this impulse, which is, to me, it's totally cool. I think it's funny. It makes me always makes me laugh. This impulse of like, wait a minute, you're not on my phone. You're in here in real life. Like, and that and that takes a few seconds to compute, because you could tell they're like, happened to me once when I was on the street with, I was walking by two times in Manhattan. I walked by Will Smith right near my friend's office where we all, me and several other toy people would meet. And I bumped into, like, I didn't talk to him, but I saw Will Smith, and he looks just like somebody that I thought I knew. I thought I knew him because I know him from TV. And I was like, I don't know you. I don't know you. But I was about to be like, hey, what's up, man? I was like, what's up, man? Hey, I don't know you. And he was busy with his head down. But when I saw him, I had this immediate reaction of like, there's somebody ingrained in my memory. Like, I don't know.
Interesting.
He didn't notice any of that, but I went through that on my own little personal. And then another time it happened with the lead singer for Aerosmith. I can't remember his name.
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler. In the same neighborhood, believe it or not. This is in Midtown. And I seen Steven Tyler. I'm like, that's my friend's mother. Oh, no, that's Steven Tyler.
Dude looks like a lady.
Oh boy! Yeah.
So that happens when these people that you're just so used to only seeing in one particular medium are there in IRL.
Yeah.
By the way, anybody can walk up to me and say whatever they want. I don't care. I always have a knife in my hand, so just be cautious.
You've been warned. I enjoy it. I enjoy somebody coming up and saying hello. Although I will say that if I am not expecting to talk to a stranger and all of a sudden I'm talking to a stranger, I can come off as very awkward. So there's something like when we have our meetups and we're out in public, I'm in the mindset of like, today we're talking to a bunch of people and I'm going to enjoy it and it's going to be a good time. But when I am in Home Depot and I'm thinking about my project and I'm in my own little world and somebody comes up to me, I am not ready to talk, and words don't come out of my mouth, or they come out all scrambled. So just be prepared for that.
You know what I often ask too, when somebody walks up to me and I can't tell if they're being curious, if they know me, or they're being shy, they're being weird. I just go, do you know me? And they go, yeah. Because they'll walk up, and it happens with little kids all the time. Kids will kind of be like kind of hovering near me on a line at like the airport or something. And I'll just look down and go, do you know who I am? And they go, yes. Well, how do you know me?
Next!
How do you know me? How do you know me? And look, I watch it, you know.
It's very rare, but once in a while, I'll see somebody look at me, and they're like, how do I know this person? I can see it in their in their eyes. Like, they either recognize me or they're trying to place me, and they don't say something. That happens every once in a while.
Well, every time I'm out with Rachel, we'll be like at an airport, or we just traveled obviously to Europe and back, and she'll always be like, did you see that? Did you see that? I'm like, what? She's like, that person who you are. I'm like, they didn't. Nope. I saw them light up. I saw them. I'm like, they didn't know who I'm. Nobody. No. I saw it. That happens every time we're out. She thinks she sees somebody noticing. I'm like, I'm not that famous. Believe me, I'm not that big of a deal. Nobody knows who the fuck I am.
So, yeah.
I just cursed.
Go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, and when somebody just passing by and I'm like, hey, I like your videos, it really makes my day. It really does. I'd be like, I'll come home and I'll talk to like somebody, I got recognized and somebody likes my videos. It, you know, it feels good.
It is affirming. It's really sweet.
Yeah. It is affirming.
And I will say that like 90% of my interactions with people are that. Just like wave and say, hey, I like your videos. And then they walk on and that's awesome. That's great. It's, you know, most people don't talk to me at urinals.
I just remembered oh, that made me laugh because I'm obviously so open. You guys always make fun of me for it. I was going to say, like, what do we want from a fan? Like, if I'm in my bathroom in my house, please just don't knock on the door. That was what I was going to say. If I'm in my
just
own
knock
bathroom.
First before you come in.
Yeah. If I'm in my bathroom, just give me a minute.
All right. This one's from Norbert Davis. Norbert's been around for a long time, supporting us. Thanks, Norbert. Thanks for 10 years of inspiration. I think he means, if you went back 10 years, what advice would you give yourself? So, specifically to yourself. We can give each other advice, but, like, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself everything's going to be okay. It's going to work. Just keep going. I was doing an interview the other day with a gentleman. I wish I could remember the name of his podcast, but I'll promote it when it gets published. And I'm sitting there. He's asking me all these questions, and I'm thinking to myself, 14 years, nearly 14 years, like, since I've been on social media, and this person's still interested in what I have to say. People are still interested and curious about what I have to say. It's, I can't believe it. I feel like I'm getting old. I feel like I'm no longer relevant. I'm balding. Am I still relevant? And then this gentleman was so sweet to me, Greg, and he said so many nice things and how I inspire him and the audiences and stuff. Everything's going to be okay. And if I fell out of grace, that's fine. I'd certainly be okay. But the idea that what I do still matters to the people that watch is amazing. And it's going to be okay.
I would just tell myself, keep trying to be you and not somebody else. I think, when you get started making something, you kind of have to imitate what other people are doing, but try to find your voice within that project. So I still feel like I am defining my own style as far as woodworking and design. And some people tell me like you have your own style, but for me, it feels like it's an ongoing project. And just be yourself.
Yeah, I think mine would be similar to that. I think I would convince myself to put up a wall between me and analytics. Maybe that's another person, maybe that's something, but I think over the years I have let the perception of what I do influence too much of what I do, and it's just had a negative impact when it could have had a positive impact. And so I think I would just tell myself, like, turn around, you know? Don't face the analytics. Face your work. Do the things that interesting and the things you care about. And
yeah, so I was gonna say I often remind myself I'm doing this because I love doing things. I'm not doing it because I'm chasing money. Money is a really great consequence that obviously we need to survive. And I do manipulate my social media to make money, but the overarching is doing it because I love what I'm doing.
That's what got you there in the first place.
Yeah.
It really, it's the success trap. You do something, it becomes successful, and then you're like, well, I got to double down on that. And then I see these other people being successful, I'm going to do what they're doing too. And then you forget why you got there in the first place. And it happens not just in YouTube, but every form of
then all of
media
a sudden, yeah,
and jobs and...
All of a sudden, you have a Temu affiliate account. What am I doing?
Go cool. George Creekhill says, are you ever going to make the posters or postcards that you talked about a while back?
Oh,
On to the next question.
Remind us what they were for. I forgot.
We just talked about doing like a postcard, a set of each of us designing one, and then posters. And
hey, we got 2 months, 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
What if we just whip out something between right this week and next week? That's our homework. We got the show.
We said that last year.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Come
on. I'll tell you right now, it's not going to happen. Nope. I have too many videos to do. Sorry.
Come on. The three of us laser etch stuff all the time.
Nope.
All right, I'll design a set of three how I think you two would do it. I'll do all three.
Hey, that's cool. Yeah. You can take all the work. Works for me. All right, so we kind of talked about this one last week, I think, a little bit, but this is a pretty good, succinct way to think it. Brock Greger asked, are you jealous of the new YouTubers trying to build audiences right now with all the resources and knowledge that you didn't have, or do you feel bad for them because of how competitive it is in the YouTube creator world right now? Yes. That's my answer.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's funny how people are good at it, and I know we've all fallen into the trap of the best titles and the best thumbnails and the best, and you know, somebody even said to me this weekend, because I published a video on the weekend as soon as I was done editing it, and I hit publish, I was happy with the edit, I refined it a few times and looked at it and said, okay, cool, upload it. And then when you upload, you know, you keep it on unlisted until you can really like look at it and refine it. I just did boop, hit upload, premiere, you know, publish as soon as it goes public, as soon as it publishes. And I forget who asked me. It might have been Rob. He's like, isn't it best to publish it at a certain time? I said, it doesn't matter anymore. I said, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I built my success. My first couple of hundred videos were all when I was done editing, I hit publish. Whether that was 3 a.m. on a Tuesday or whether it was noon on a Saturday, when I was done with the video, I hit publish. And that's how I built my channel. And then all of a sudden, all these moments and windows started to matter. And I fell into that. I did it for years. And even occasionally, Adam, my behind-the-scenes guy, is like, oh, we got to publish Saturday morning at 7 a.m. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I don't think it matters. Because, again, I'm doing this because it's something I want to do. I'm really excited to share the material. And videos repop often. Videos will pop, like an old video, suddenly I'll start getting a lot of comments because it got popped for some reason. I don't know why, I'll never know why, but an old video somehow starts to pop, and I don't know. So I see these guys have this science down, and you know, like I said, we've all fallen into it, but I try not to let it get in the way of my creative.
Yeah, I'm not, like, am I jealous of the new crop coming up and all the tools they have? Is no. I mean, I have access to all the same tools and knowledge. We can all redefine ourselves at any moment in time. The advantage that we have is we have a whole back catalog of I forget how many videos. I have 300 or 400 videos up on YouTube. That's a back catalog that, you know, all those videos are still getting views. Not a lot, but they're still getting views. Yeah. And these new guys that have come up, maybe they hit it off right away, but they're more dependent on their latest upload of supplying their income, where we have this back catalog where it's not steady, but it is a stream of income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's aggregate. I think I'm with you on that. Like, the people who put out a video now, they are competing with so much and a type of attention span that is very different than 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so all those videos that we put out were for a different type of viewing pattern, you know, way back. And we're adjusting now just like they're having to adjust, but they don't have that kind of historical thing to fall back on to kind of help give them momentum. And that's tough. You know, I'm not jealous of them and what they have available, but I do feel some kind of sympathy for what it's like now to try to get started in this, because I cannot imagine. I mean, to be perfectly honest, if I was like looking at how YouTube is right now, if I had the perspective that I have on it and I was just getting started, I would not try to make it a business, because looking at it is scary. Like we are all, the three of us are advanced in what we have done because of time and effort. But man, like you got to hit the ground running now, and you have to be good, and you have to be unique, and you have to be all of these things that were less important than back then, you know? And it's a tough road, and kudos to anybody who gets into it now and tries to really make a go at it. And a lot of people are really successful at it. I'm not saying that's impossible, but for me, I would think twice personally. You know, I'm not telling people to think twice. I'm just saying how I am looking at it now. I would definitely be really slow to get into it at this point.
How long before social media is a class that you have to take in high school?
Probably right now.
Yeah, I would imagine that they probably brand that marketing, and yeah, I'm sure it's there. All right, well, so we got one more.
If it was a high school class, it would be what not to put on the internet.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
so it should
be.
Oh
boy, yeah. This is a good one. This is a good way to wrap up this, and we still have tons of questions, so we could do more in the after show. We can do more next week if we want. But this is from Johnny Stenbeck. If the three of you hadn't gotten together and started the podcast 10 years ago, how would your lives be different than they are today?
I would get more done. I mean,
well, thanks for listening, everybody.
To be honest, like this, yeah. this is a half a day, not a full half a day, yeah. But it's my Wednesday mornings.
Yeah.
I would be out in the shop making more stuff, but I don't know if I would be as advanced, because I get to talk to two other people who do what I do and share and get feedback.
Yeah. In a very passive way, I think we all pull each other up. We're not explicitly, you should do this, you should do that. But just the idea of us commiserating over the last 10 years has definitely kept us in a certain guardrail. It's kept us up to speed on technology, at least me for sure. And the pulse of what's going on out there, because each one of us has our own unique experience that we share, whether it's specific to one particular advertiser or even just a trend. I don't think I would have had my finger on the pulse as much as I, maybe I don't enough, but probably not at all if it wasn't for you two guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we would be as good friends, because we wouldn't have been as committed to talking on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a big deal. 10 years of friendship with anybody is a big deal, you know, especially as adults when you don't live near each other. Like that's amazing. That's a blessing that the three of us have gotten to be friends for as long as we are friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't have happened. And I think like for me, I would probably have spent way more time internalizing things, because I don't know who else I would talk to about this stuff on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And me and internalizing leads to a whole lot of wasted time and overthinking. So I think I would have done even more of that than I do now if I hadn't had you guys to bounce that stuff off of over the last 10 years. So, and I probably would have gotten more done too. You're right.
Yeah.
So
it is funny. You remember about 5 years ago, I made the joke, like we all got together and I was like, we're still doing this? Still, like, it was kind of Mexican standoff where we see who doesn't show up that morning. Like, I guess it's just me and you, Bob. Okay. All right. We're still doing this. We've held each other accountable for all this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though every once in a while, like I'm under a deadline crunch and I got to get stuff done, and it feels like, I got to record the podcast Wednesday morning. This is not a good time. Even though it feels intrusive every once in a while, I need this podcast to keep pushing me. And I am thankful for this podcast. And it, because of the Patreon supporters, it is another income stream. And when you have multiple income streams, it steadies things out a little bit, because YouTube is so up and down.
Yeah.
And I hope we get to do this for
you guys
many
know?
More years.
You want to hear something funny? I'm gonna reveal a secret that I'm sure you two both use this as well. When we have the week off, we don't tell anybody. We have that Wednesday morning to do whatever we want.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's my time now.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like, oh, yeah.
if we have the week off, it's like, oh no, I got the podcast Wednesday morning, and it's like nobody knows that when I do the podcast, everybody leaves me alone for 4 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I don't tell my family or anything. You know, they're all still upstairs being quiet during the summer, and I'm good to have, you know,
just peace time.
And when the other person texts, hey, something came up, I can't record tomorrow.
Okay, we're like,
oh, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah, we'll just record next week. But internally, we're all like, oh, thank goodness.
Okay, so next time that happens, we all just need to celebrate in the chat, the group chat. So it's, yeah.
Like let's the emoji of somebody doing tumble salts.
Yeah, let's just be happy together.
Oh.
Go ahead.
I was just like, we communicate throughout the week too. Like, we are sending each other photos of what we're working on and like asking opinions. And it's really amazing to have two people that I respect to share those things with.
You know what's funny though? We never ask each other, wouldn't this be a good topic? We always wait till the minute the camera's on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Talk about everything but the podcast.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave. I cut you off.
And it also, it feels good to have somebody that you respect send their stuff to you and say, hey, what do you think? Or check out like what I'm working on. That feels good on the other end as well.
Yeah. There was another question. I know I said that was our last one. There's another one up here at the top from Warren Works, who's, you know, one of our top supporters, been around for a long time. And it's basically... The question is, how would you find a co-host for a podcast?
Uh-huh.
And like
Facebook,
he said,
of course.
He said, he said, I find myself regularly wanting to chime in when listening to you guys. And I think a lot of people have that where, you know, they've told us, people tell us constantly, it's like they're sitting like in the shop with us and they're just listening to friends talk about things and they want to kind of jump in on the conversation. And I think that's really natural for people. We get to do that with each other, but a lot of people don't necessarily have, you know, like he's saying here, they don't necessarily have that outlet, that other person that they can share that with. So how do you go about finding a person?
I think
not
that
necessarily
just happens
to
naturally.
Have a podcast with, but to have that yeah. type of conversation with.
That just happens naturally with the proximity to events, you know. Christians come to a lot of the stuff that we've all gone to, and it's just a matter of naturally finding someone that you jive with.
Yeah,
it's like going to singles events and then going home with somebody, basically.
This is not a self-promotion, but like on my Discord, people are talking to each other and sharing stuff with each other, and there's these inside jokes that I don't quite understand. If you can find a Discord or something that is not as large as a YouTube or a Facebook where the community is a little bit smaller, I think you can find people to connect with on there. And I know we're going to talk about Bob's vehicle in the after show. People are talking about your Land Cruiser in my Discord, which is it's funny, and people are venting their frustrations. So if you can find little smaller communities, that really helps.
Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing about our Maker Alliance Discord. It's just these people have become a group that is, I don't necessarily have to be a part of it at all. Like, they are friends, they do things together, they take care of each other, they, you know, all this stuff. And I think, like anything, you know, putting yourself in a place to where you are surrounded by people that you have a thing in common with, whatever that thing is, gives you a common connection point, you know? If you're a runner, go to runners groups. If you're a Christian, go to church. If you're a singer, find a choir. If you're a musician, find an orchestra to play with. If you're whatever, go to a place where there are people that have something in common to get the thing started, and then you'll find that you also have in common this or that or something, you know. Or you won't, but it's still a way to introduce yourself to people. And like I was saying earlier, as adults, it's just super hard to make friends, you know. I mean, unless you're already in a situation where you're surrounded by people, it's hard to go out and find friends. But it is absolutely something you can do. And then you can start a podcast with them. I guess.
It's funny. We had to, yesterday my brother was over here and we were trying to move my big laser cutter from my shop into, just outside the shop to move it into the other garage. And we're like, oh, this is going to take four people. And I was like, I had this realization, I need more friends. I don't know who to call to help me move this laser out. And eventually I got my nephew and my brother-in-law to come over and help us move this thing. But it's hard to make friends as adults.
It is. Yeah. And your expectation, man, this is a whole topic by itself, but your expectation of French adult, especially adult male friendships, you have to be realistic about like how that looks versus what it looked like when you were in college or in your 20s or something. It's different. Like my friend Andy, who we've talked about, Andy Bird, he does YouTube stuff, CNC stuff. We get together once every month would be generous, maybe every 2 months, and have lunch. And that's the only time I see Andy. We'll run into each other at Target or something, but like that's the only time we hang out. And that's okay because I have teenagers. He has two, like a toddler and an infant. Our schedules are not going to line up unless we decide this is a time we're going to get together and we're going to talk shop and we're going to check in on each other, and that's it. And that's enough, and that's okay. So your expectation has to be realistic. It's not college. You're hanging out till 2 a.m. with your buddies all the time. We're too old for that. I'm too old for that. I'm not going to speak for you guys. But I think having your expectations set and then going looking for somebody that you can just have a touch point with, somebody that you can just talk to and catch up with, I think is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we don't have anything to recommend. I'm going to go ahead and speak for you guys. Jimmy might, I don't know, but David and I don't, so we're not going to do recommendations.
I found something.
And
it's actually a good one. We had a conversation before we started.
Now I got to find something.
I don't have anything to recommend. I looked this morning and I couldn't find anything either, but I remembered a video.
Gosh.
And it's really good.
Way to throw me under the bus. Just kidding. Go ahead.
It's by this guy named Kirby Ferguson, and the video is titled "Your Best Creative Ideas in 4 Steps." And it talks about, and it's all about like, it's kind of like, where do ideas come from? How do you come up with ideas? And it's about first setting boundaries, then receiving input and inspiration, and then arranging it, and then stopping. And this is like the most important step is when you're trying to come up with a good idea, you have to stop and stop thinking about it. And the idea comes to you while you're trying to go to sleep, while you're in the shower, while you're out for a walk. And it's a really, really good video. And I'm sorry that I ruined your segue into this, but I found something and it's recommended viewing. It's required viewing for all of our viewers.
Okay. All right.
Listeners.
I'm looking. I don't really have anything great to recommend.
See, David, we could have all three not had something to recommend.
I know. We even joked about like not having the segment. Today,
okay.
But...
The history guy. The history deserves to be remembered.
Again,
yeah. But he's doing one again. He's doing one on the Headless Horseman. There you go. The history of the Headless Horseman, because it's Halloween. There you go. I didn't even watch it yet, but anyway, I like it because I like him.
History guy.
While we're here at this moment, I would like to make a huge shout out to Jeff Duro. Do you guys know who that is? You guys remember Jeff?
Yeah,
Duro? Yes, of course. And do you guys know why I'm bringing Jeff up?
I do.
Because he's the one that got us together.
He's the one that said in a Facebook comment, "Why don't you three do a podcast together?" And for some dumb reason, we each reached out to each other privately, like, "Do you want to do that?" I think he started the flame, and underneath it, several fans were like, "That would be great. That would be great." And I don't know why the three of us were in some conversation together, and that under or even under what that was. If some historian can go back and find that moment in time, and find that Facebook post about what we were talking about, and Jeff Duro said, "You guys should get together and do podcasts." So shout out to Jeff. Jeff and I talk often, and I just want to say thanks, brother. Jeff edits my other podcast.
Awesome.
And before we go, I have a request for our listeners that can help me out. I want to make plywood furniture, like make my own plywood bent Charles Eames style, Charles and Ray Eames style. And I am having such a hard time finding the cores that I would use for the plywood. So basically veneers. But and I there's all kinds of places that sell veneers, but they're really thin veneers, like less than a millimeter. Everything that is thicker, all veneer big sheets, is backed, either paper backed or adhesive backed. I've even contacted Oakwood Veneers, who is like a major veneer supplier, and they said they don't sell just plain birch or maple sheets of veneer. The only place that I could find is Alibaba, and you have to put in a I think it's called like an RFP, and these companies come out and they have a chat with you. And I'm okay with buying a pallet of maple or birch veneers just to have for the rest of my life, but I can't find anything in the United States. And I've Googled. And so please don't just Google it and like, have you checked out this? I need like
You need a fan that works at like Georgia Pacific or someplace where they're manufacturing this plywood. Yeah. And give you some before it goes into the machine stuff.
That's what I want. I see these artists that are making these bent plywood prototypes and chairs in these factories. Like, where are they getting their core veneers for their plywood furniture? So...
You know who you should talk to? Maybe he wouldn't know, but Michael Ulm.
Okay.
I feel like that's something that Michael Ulm would know.
Okay.
Do you know Michael?
Oh yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I could be wrong, but okay. Yeah. Talk to him. I'm trying to find this video that since you forced me to have a recommendation. It's from Big Time. A couple of the guys that were at Donut, Jeremiah and Zach.
Those are the guys that recently did a Carhartt video, that one?
That's
one of the other guys.
That's one of the other guys who started another channel.
Yeah. And Big Time is their channel. It's their car channel. And it's like all the fun parts of Donut that Donut doesn't really have anymore. It's really cool. It's just a good channel. But they did this video driving this, I think it was a Model A that had been totally rat rotted out and like, and it's got a like an S2000 motor in it and stuff. And it's a really cool looking car, but they went to Miami to drive this car and then they broke it. I don't know. I just like watching their videos, and that's one that I've seen recently. So I'll put a link to it in the show notes if I can find it again, but I can't seem to find it. All right. You guys got anything else?
Oh, this is one cool thing. This is
okay.
I don't have a video on it. There's got to be, but if you guys Google the junkyard, the auction, the junkyard. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
The junkyard. I've been following. It's been popping up on Instagram like crazy because I follow some of these antique car collector guys. The junkyard. This is my recommendation. Look up the junkyard. You might find the current events on the junkyard. It's a guy in LA who started collecting supercars.
Yes, I do know what you're talking about.
He started collecting super. He's passed now, and his family is auctioning off his collection of supercars that are all junked supercars. 1953 Mercedes sold for $10 million. He sold Lamborghinis from the 70s for $3 and $4. I think the total take was like $50 million from this guy's junkyard. Because he only collected supercars that were wrecked. He must have been somewhere in the chain of like insurance situations where he ended up with these cars. He's got racks and racks of Porsches. They had the auction this past weekend. Sotheby's did it. And watching some of the auctions in real time were fun to watch. So, if anybody has an extra Gullwing Mercedes in their garage, I'll take it. I'll buy it.
That whole like garage barn find kind of thing is just, it seems like something out of a story. Like, it doesn't seem like that would actually happen.
Listen, so there's a gas station here in town. I don't want to say the name because I don't want to tip this off. Guy owns the gas. He's a wealthy guy. He's not like some repairman. He owns the property. And he reached out to me, and he knows I'm a woodworker, and we made friends years ago. And he goes, "Hey, my neighbor's got a barn that she wants to remove. I thought of you because I know you like recycling old wood." He goes, come by my house and I'll show you the barn. So I went to this beautiful house. He built the whole house himself. I never saw his house up close. And then he's like, come to the neighbor's. We go inside. This barn is about to fall down. It's got a big hole in the roof. It's full of bat poop. We go inside. Under a tarp sitting there is a 1967 Porsche. I go, what's going on with this car? He goes, she won't sell it. I go, I want this car. He goes, he goes, I've been trying to get it away from her. She won't sell it. 1967 Porsche with a tarp over it that is gold. It's a gold color, like a copper color. And it is covered with bat poop. But the bat poop's on the tarp. But the tarp is not in good shape.
Yeah.
I go, this car is going to fall through the floor of this barn. He's like, I've been trying to get it away from her for years. She won't sell it. Some sentimental thing. So there is a barn find that when this woman decides to part with this car, whether by choice or whatever, that's a barn find in my town. 1967 Porsche. It might be a Targa. I'm not sure. But that car is probably worth $100,000. I don't know. A Porsche sold in this guy's auction for $1 million something because it's some certain type of Porsche.
Yeah. That's crazy. It just seems crazy to me that that still happens.
That's 4 miles from me. You would expect to see like an old Chevy truck in this barn. Never mind. That's it.
Pretty wild. Okay, I listened to you. Are you done? I'm just kidding.
Listen to me.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. And thanks again for the questions. We really appreciate the support and for you being around for 10 years. Here's to the next 10. Catch you guys next time.
Cheers.
50, 67. Oh, boy.
You got to tell them that you love them. That's how we
love you. I love you, everybody. Thank you. Hugs to everybody.